Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston.
Food is one of the treasures of life. It brings together family and communities and friends. Food is also one of the ways that we celebrate life, we celebrate culture, we celebrate our heritage. And that's why I am so excited today that we're talking about food. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. And today we're going to explore a documentary documentary film called Truly Texas Mexican. And we here at the Empowerment Zone, we elevate and center African-American and Latino voices, and we really want to show the great work that our communities are doing in terms of making social impact. And so today we have author, chef, and film producer Adán Madrano here with us today. Adán is a food writer and chef specializing in the indigenous foods of Texas and the Americas. His book, Truly Texas Mexican, A Native Culinary Heritage in Recipes, was published by Texas Tech University Press and received the Finalist Book of the Year Award from Forward Reviews. In his most recent history and cookbook, Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking, Madrano focuses on the aesthetic aspects of cooking that universally impact identity and community, with over 100 recipes that illustrate today's cooking in Texas kitchens. He spent over 23 years throughout Latin America, Europe, Asia, and during his travels, he came to recognize the cultural importance of food. He returned to the U.S. in 2010 to focus his attention on the culinary traditions of the Mexican-American, Native American communities of Texas and the indigenous cooking of the Americas. He is president of the Texas Indigenous Food Project. His professional work in restaurant kitchens includes fine dining at Restaurant Ten Bergarde in Belgium. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. And volunteering as the chef of Houston's Casa Juan Diego, a shelter for homeless families. Medrano is also an award-winning filmmaker and holds a Master's of Arts degree in radio, television, and film from the University of Texas at Austin. So he's a fellow alum of mine. In 1976, he founded the San Antonio Cine Festival, the first and now longest running Latinx film festival in the USA. He continues producing media with a new documentary film, Truly Texas Mexican, available on Amazon, Google TV, and Apple TV. He has lectured about food and culture at academic institutions, including the Harvard University Co-op, Northeastern University, and last year was invited to Moscow by the U.S. Ambassador to Russia as the featured chef for the 4th of July U.S. Official celebration. He has showcased his recipes at the Museum of Fine Arts, Houston, at the New York and Texas campuses of the Culinary Institute of America, as well as the Briscoe Western Art Museum, the American Book Center of Amsterdam, and the Yorkshire Dales Food and Drink Festival of New York. Welcome, Adán Madrano. How are you doing today?
Hello, Ramona. I'm doing very well, thank you. Houston is over the freeze. And although we still have some people who are suffering a lot, I'm well, my family's well. So thank you for asking. It's great to be here.
I'm absolutely thrilled to have you. And I mean, there's so many reasons. I can't even count the ways. First of all, I actually absolutely love Christina. She is one of my very, very good friends. And I know you're a family member of Christine Ortega. And so I'm excited about that. In addition to that, I come from a family that loves to eat. We love food. I am a native Texan. So I can't wait to hear about your experience, culinary experience and historical experience in Texas. Mexican food is my favorite food. So that is also a big deal about why I'm excited. And then lastly, I'm a historian. And so that's what my PhD is in history. And so I really am excited about hearing about the history of food and the history of how, you know, food carries on cultures, heritage, and traditions. And so I'm really excited about having you today. So if you could, can you tell our audience a little bit about you and your background and your history and how you came into the culinary arts and history and exploring food?
Yes, I was born in San Antonio, Texas. And I lived and grew up in San Antonio until I was about 16, 17. I also lived in Nava, Coahuila. Nava is a small town, which is 25 miles more or less south of the Rio Grande. And my family, we had land on both sides of the river. So we would go from one side and then come back to the other side and then go back to the other side because my extended family is on both sides of the Rio Grande, which we also call Rio Bravo. And so my mom told me from the point in time when I was very young, tú eres Chichimeca. And my native roots were always part of my growing up. I knew that I didn't come from across the river. My family did not cross the river. The river crossed us. When the river changed and became a border after the U.S.-Mexico War, part of my family was left here in Texas, and the other part of my family was left in Coahuila, the other side. So ever since then, my family for generations have just been visiting each other. So that's my story. I spent my first career was a filmmaker. I'm a graduate. My graduate degree is in radio, television, film from the University of Texas, which I love. And I did that for, 25 years. And then I changed careers. I became a grant maker. I went into the field of philanthropy because knowing what I did about media and my interest was social media, educational media, and how communications really is important to the development of a community as it continues to develop. So I became a grant maker, making grants to not-for-profits around the world, Asia, Latin America, the Caribbean, North America, in the areas of media arts and education. And then after 23 years, I got tired because it was so lonely traveling, you know how it gets. But the gift was during those years, it's like you say your family, you know, love food. I love food. And that was my first passion. That's when I can remember. So everywhere I traveled, Indonesia, Bogota, Colombia, I always went to these restaurants and I was able to speak with the chefs and learn. And I realized that food is a way that we can move forward our identities and become political. It's a social project in very many ways. We'll talk about that. So after 23 years of being very lonely and traveling, I decided to come back to my hometown, my homeland, Texas. And about 10 years, in 2010, I devoted myself to cooking and to writing about cooking. And it's another love of mine. So it's been a while since I've been doing this. I've published two books, and I know this is a long answer to who I am, but it's really a combination of always being very proud and getting power from my identity as a native person of this land, and then realizing that social justice is everything. It's everything to me. You talk about beautiful food, and it's about justice. It's about just food and fair wages, all of that. So those are the themes that I care about. So I'm very glad that you invited me. Thank you. That's a little bit of my life and where I come from.
Thank you so much for giving us that history of your personal background and how you bring all of those experiences as well as your gifts and talents to the understanding of food and your perspective about food. So we are going to explore. I hear you have a new documentary coming out on March 1st, which is like a couple of days away. Yes. And so can you tell us about Truly Texas Mexican? And I know it's based on your book of the same name. What made you decide to do the documentary film? And what is it about? Why should people explore this particular film?
Thank you. I knew that I had to write the book, Truly Texas Mexican, A Native Culinary Heritage and Recipes, which was published in 2014 by Texas Tech University Press. I knew that I wanted to write it because when I went to school, the Culinary Institute of America, my food, the food of the poor people who live in South Texas, Northeastern Mexico, my community, my food was totally invisible. The school talked about Mexican cuisine from the Yucatan, from these more known places. But they it was as though Tex-Mex, which is by Anglos for Anglos, was the only thing that existed. And we never ate Tex-Mex, you know, at home, you know, enough with the cheese. And we all love, you know, to go to margaritas and do that. And it's wonderful, but that's not our food. It's a different food. And I was asked by a director in Uruguay, a Latin American director who had written my book, to do a film, to do about it. And I had been gone from production for so long, this pulled me back into it. The film tells the story about what we call comida casera, home cooking, of the Mexican-American families of today who live in Texas, who trace their ancestors back to the first people to step on Texas soil 15,000 years ago. They were the first people to inhabit Texas. And the story tells, it really is a story told by women chefs who run catering businesses and who run restaurants. But these are not the well-known chefs who you see on television. These are women who are poor, or they're not poor, destitute, but they are on the lower end of the economic spectrum and whose voices are not heard. One of the artists who is in the film, her name is Celeste, says, women have always been there, but men have relegated them to the shadows. All the famous chefs, they're all men, even in Mexico. And when you really interview a man and a chef, he will credit his mom, his aunt, or his grandmother. Why is it that women's voices are relegated to the shadows? And she says it very clearly. She says to Celeste in the film, the only way you can account for it is sexism. And then she says, women, people have trouble considering women as experts, she says. People have a hard time considering women as experts. And so this is the film. The film is about the food that has been invisible and that can be traced back to the original inhabitants of Texas, my ancestors, and that has been invisible. And the times that it really has gone up to the fore and become very visible, it has been cut down. So that's how we start the story in the film. And I hope you get to see it. We start with the 1800s when a group of women, the first chef restaurateurs in Texas, take the city of San Antonio downtown area and they start serving food in open air diners. And it's so successful that Texas, the San Antonio, Texas, becomes a culinary destination. This is in the 1880s. People would come in stagecoaches, and it was just a famous tourist destination for food, and the women are responsible for that. And we start that way, and then, you know, we have lots of fun with it. It's not really a cooking show, although there's delicious food in it. You can see the trailer. The website is trulytexasmexican.com, and you can see the trailer. It debuts Monday, and you can see it on Amazon. If you have a subscription to Amazon, you can see it on Apple TV and on Google TV, and it'll be released worldwide. And if you're a Spanish speaker, there's a Spanish language version as well. And some of the women who were interviewed, some of the chefs who were interviewed, they speak Spanish. And so in the English version, we have to subtitle it. But then when we show the Spanish version, they don't need subtitles because they're speaking in their language. I think it's 90 minutes and we had a lot of fun. Well, we didn't have a lot. We had fun doing it because of the food. Everywhere I went to I'm the host of the show, to interview these wonderful guests in their homes. They opened their homes to us. They would feed me. So
that's always a plus, right?
It's wonderful food, grapefruit pie, but just wonderful food. So, but I hope you get to see it. It's about all these topics. And the motto of the film is tacos, feminism, and cultural resistance to colonization.
I like that. Well, you know, I'm so excited about this film. You say it's going to be released on Monday, March 1st. Today is Saturday. So it's only a couple of days. But when we do publish this podcast, it'll be after the debut. But we're really excited about seeing this film. I know I am. And it's very interesting to hear how through this film, you're elevating the voices of women, as well as elevating our food and heritage that is not normally recognized. It's marginalized in the American experience.
You know, that's true. And speaking as a male, I am always mindful that I have a blind spot. I can say that women's history, women's role, women's agency has been erased. But I cannot speak about it because I simply don't know. All men, if you're in a male society, you have this blind spot, and I recognize I don't know what it is. So we wouldn't do the documentary until we found a producer who was a woman and who understood this. And Virginia Diaz Laughlin is the producer. She's originally from San Antonio, which is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And she also graduated from UT in radio. Television film. So I didn't know her until the Houston Film Commission. I asked them to recommend people because we needed a producer who could really do this. And I met her. She fell in love with the book. And as it turns out, this is her community. She grew up with this food. This is exactly her story. And so when she came on board, she's a very experienced professional. She was the co-location producer for the feature film Selena, and she has other large features under her belt with 20th Century Fox and others. So she helped bring it all together. And the main emphasis here is that if you think about it, women, your mom, my mom, sustained us, families, and our memory through food that they had no support, and they had to do it with hardly any money. Mm-hmm. And they cooked my mom and all women who are heads of families in this way. She cooked the food in a very delicious way. And by doing that, she reminded us that this was the food of our ancestors. This is what it tastes like. So it's a constant reminder. This is your tradition. You are unique. Because it's linked to landscape, the vegetables come from a certain landscape, you know, nopales. Cactus, deer, it grounds you to where we are. And so the main leaders in cultural resistance to colonization have been women who through food, with no support except their knowledge, through food have nourished us, not just physically, but they have nourished our understanding of who we are. That's what the film is about. And we go into these homes and into these restaurants, and they talk about this in ways that are so knowing. I've been receiving a lot of very good criticism from film critics. And one of the things that they say, and you'll see that there, some of them are on the website, some of these film critics who see the film and they say, where are all of the experts? They're all the famous name chefs who can talk, and then they see and they say, oh,
they are the experts.
They say this film is different because it goes into areas of knowing. mm-hmm. and authority that society says don't exist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're in the margins. If you don't have power, political power, mm-hmm. economic power, you don't exist. And if you do exist, you don't, you're not very important. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, I go places and then I recede, and they start talking, and then it moves you. This film critic in Denver, he's the director of the Su Teatro Theater in Denver, downtown Denver. He runs a theater and films production company there. He said, for some reason, I caught myself here, and I kept asking myself, why do I feel like crying? You know, as these women tell their stories, all they're doing is telling their stories, and it's so real, it's so powerful. And it's one of them who runs a restaurant in McAllen, Texas. Her name is Maria Sanchez. She says that I love the business, and when I hear people talking, I come close. And the other day, this man told me, I had your carne guisada, and my grandmother was there. Mm. And she says, I bring them memories. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting in this film is that the people who are, it's a 90-minute film, and we spent 9 days shooting. We shot 29 hours of film, and we edited it down to a 90-minute theatrical release feature film. She says, I give them memories. Like the others in the film, she lets you know that she knows that cooking is important. She knows she's not giving you a taco. It's nothing. That she knows that when she's giving you this taco, mm-hmm. when she prepared it, the preparation was narrating our history. Mm-hmm. And that when she gives it to you, there is a bond, there is a link, there is a connection, which she, as an artist, is creating. Mm-hmm. Not just you, but also for the community. She understands this, and she's explaining it to you. That's why she says, I bring them memories. And so... the film critic really quickly, once the film gets towards the end, begins to realize, you know, these are the experts.
We've exactly. To the
secondary people who learned from them. And they learned how to say it in Anglo, Middle America television terms. And so they're sort of translating it, but in the translation, it becomes very white, it becomes very, you know, understandable. Mm-hmm. And when these women tell it, it's not just understandable, it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of the film. We worked very, very hard. There were four, the producer, Virginia, myself, the director is Aníbal Capuano. He flew in from Uruguay. He's from Montevideo, oh, wow. Uruguay. Mm-hmm. That's where I met him in Latin America. And the cinematographer is a very much sought after cinematographer. When you see the film, you'll see the beautiful, I mean, really beautiful photography. And it's a feature film intended to be seen in the theater. So it's got 5.1 surround sound. It looks lovely. And the four of us were together for 9 days. It was a lot of work. It took us 3 years to finish. So the whole process was 3.5 years, from research to script writing, and then to financing, and then finally to editing it. And then distribution. We had to go through the festival phase. Oh, the mm-hmm. festival phase was wonderful, and it's still going on. We won Best Documentary in the New York Independent Cinema Awards.
Congratulations.
We were nominated. Thank you. And we were finalists at the Native American Film Festival, the 25th anniversary of the Native American Film Festival wow. in Los Angeles. We were finalists in the Best Documentary. So we've been receiving accolades. London has this as the official selection. And so this story that was in the margins, you know, is in the middle now.
Exactly.
And we're very proud of that. Thanks for, you know, allowing me to talk about it. We want it to be the starting point of other stories, because the yes. stories are there. Mm-hmm. We just have been erased, and our ability to speak has been diminished by policy, mm-hmm. intentionally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here you have centered and elevated those voices, which is, you know, really significant that you've brought an opportunity for these women who otherwise would have remained in the shadows here to talk about their lives and how they are connected to the history and culture that is expressed through food in the Mexican-American community in Texas. I know, when I was watching the trailer and I saw the barbacoa, my immediate family would every year take what I call our annual pilgrimage to Mexico. We would go down to the valley every year, and particularly Eagle Pass, sometimes to McAllen, sometimes to El Paso, which is in West Texas, not necessarily the valley, but is, you know, on the border. And we would go, you know, to Matamoros, Piedras Negras, and all the different places, Juarez. And when we were in Eagle Pass, one of my very early memories was about food, you know, and how, you know, we would have barbacoa and, you know, and when I saw your trailer, it just immediately brought back what that whole experience was with our family in terms of the Mexican-American culture. So I'm really eager to hear about all the different types of food in the film, but also how those are, like you stated, traditions, and they're also a reflection of power and embracing culture and continuing to bring certain experiences to people, certain memories to people, even after many, many years later. So when you look at your film, what is the story of the film in regards to when you look at the empowerment of people of color, specifically in the case of the Mexican American / Latinx community?
Thank you. Yes, the early experiences of showing the film to test audiences, we took four or five segments that were vignettes that were later to be part of the film. We had edited, but we had an idea of who the characters were and what their story was. And we went to different community centers and showed these to see what the reaction was and what we could learn about were these stories meaningful, where they came from. And the one thing that I drew from all of this is just, you know, the passion that the people felt. I mean, they were crying that no one, they had never seen their story told.
Exactly.
I mean, they saw shots of the neighborhood that were so familiar and had never been seen on screen. The only time they're seen on screen, it's when they're targets of a report of a drug trafficker or of a murderer. But here, they saw their neighborhood in a really wonderful light. It looks like home. And the thing I like about our film is, I believe you'll have to see if when you see it, but our film doesn't go and look at the people. Our film goes and is with the people.
Exactly.
It's a difference of perspective, you know? And so, I mean, you can see it in their eyes when they're watching this. It's just it's so grateful that their story, our story, is being told. And the empowerment part of this film is this, that because it's an art piece, it allows for access points from different points, no matter where you are in your journey towards, you know, becoming a more self-aware person in terms of your heritage and the oppression we've been having to live with for 500 years or more, that no matter where you are there, it calls you to tell your own story. Our film is endorsed by the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities. And they saw the excerpts from the first cut. And so they sent us a wonderful letter endorsing the film, asking colleges and universities to use it in their campuses. And the reason is that, number one, it's affirming. And if students feel empowered, feel welcome, and that they belong on campus, it will impact their success, because you're more confident, you're more self-confident. And also that when they show the film, I want this film to be shown in colleges and universities and in homes, and afterwards for stories to be generated. You have your story. to tell. And I'm hoping that by seeing these women tell their stories in such a candid, such an inviting way, that it will empower the rest of us to have the confidence to claim our experience as important and to claim the experience of our community as the narrative agent that it is. We don't need some historian from London or from to tell us who we are. We as people of color, as Latinx, people of color, African Americans, Latinx, we claim our experience, and from there we speak from a position of authority.
I love it. I love it. And it's so good to hear that HACU, Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities, has embraced and endorsed this film because, as you stated, making sure that our voices are heard from our perspectives, that we tell our own stories, is so great. And to have this film to be shown on college and university campuses gives power to young people to recognize that their stories are important and that they should not be ashamed of them, and they should find a means to tell their own stories.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so even institutions beyond Hispanic serving institutions, HSIs, beyond HSIs, I think that this film can be shown through to campuses throughout the nation.
Yes, yes. When you see the film, you will notice that it is a universal film. The director, Aníbal Capuano, came to me and he said the reason that he, after reading the book, wanted to make a media out of it is that he said, this is a universal story. It's a universal story about indigenous peoples in Latin America, but it's a universal story about human beings belonging to something bigger than they are. And it's a universal story about people encountering other people. How do you encounter the other? Is it, you know, you have to foster understanding and then you embrace. It's like cooking. And in fact, we use this analogy in the film, that the new encounter towards the other, towards the immigrant, towards the, is very much like cooking where you blend ingredients and it mm-hmm. becomes something beautiful. We have been endorsed by the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., and they also sent us a letter once they saw it. So it appeals, it's not just a Latino film, it is a universal film, but it does take the point of view of the South Texas, the Mexican-American people of South Texas and Northeastern Mexico, who are, after all, like everyone else, having universal stories that belong to all of us.
Mm-hmm. So finally, how do you think communities can receive this film so that they can incorporate some of these ideas of the film into their struggles for fairness and justice?
Thank you. One of the places where we want to distribute this through Amazon, through Google and Apple TV, is at community centers, because in those places and other NGOs, you can stream it, you know, using Amazon. And on the 3rd of March, which is 2 days after the debut of the film, there's an organization in Colorado. It's called Voces Unidas de las Montañas, United Voices of the Mountains. It's a Latinx political activism organization. They promote leadership. And they've taken this film and they're doing an online discussion of it after people see it. And they say that to them, from their point of view, they're social organizers for political activism and for improvement of livelihoods of Latinx people in Colorado. They say this film is the type of affirmation which is the starting for activism, affirmation about all the wealth of knowledge and richness that our community has. And then from there you move into take the next step, how do we organize to then see that the beauty that is here, our food, the way our relationships are, the way we take care of one another, when things are going well and when things are going bad as well, that these things are part of social activism. This is the stuff that makes people proud of who they are, affirmed of who they are. And from there, you have the stability and the confidence mm. you know, take action. So that's one of the organizations that's using this film. There are others that want to use it as a resource so that the film, so that the community can celebrate who we are. We have been silenced for far too long, and there's too much to tell for us to be silent anymore.
I am really excited, and I'm so happy that you took the time out of your busy schedule to share your film with us. We can't wait to see it next week and beyond, and show it to our communities, show it to our family, show it to our organizations. And so we wish you the best on this film. Again, this is Adán Marrano, and the film is Truly Texas Mexican, and it's based on the book of the same title. It's going to be available beginning March 1st, 2021 on Amazon, Google TV, and Apple TV. So make sure you check it out. Adán, it's a pleasure having you. Tell Christine, give her my love. Tell her I said hello. And also, I can't wait to have you back, if your schedule permits, to talk about your book, or your books, rather, as well as talking about how the public received this documentary. I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you. Hi, today we have Adán Marrano, who is going to give us a strategy for college success. Hi, Adán.
Good morning. Hello.
Could you tell us, we have students who often listen, and aspiring students who often listen to our show, and could you please tell us what school or schools you attended, what was your major or majors, and then what one strategy would you give a student to ensure that they're successful in college?
Yes, I graduated from Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska, with a bachelor's in philosophy and journalism. It was a double major. And then I went to graduate school at the University of Texas in Austin, where my graduate degree was in radio, television, film. And I suppose if there's a strategy that I feel was important to me, was to learn from two areas. Learn from what you are reading from the teachers, mentors that you have, is one. And then to learn from going deep inside you. And that is, I would say, have always the pride and the courage to claim your experiences as special, as important, and that it belongs to the experience of your community. That's a huge learning reservoir that gives you a lot of confidence. And so that's, I think, a type of strategy.
Well, thank you so much. So that strategy is learn in the classroom, learn from reading, learn from your teachers, but also learn about yourself in the process. Because when you learn about yourself, you can gain confidence, you can surround yourself with affirming people. And by having that confidence, you're able to boldly become the person you aspire to be. Thank you so much for that piece of college, for that piece of advice for college success.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.